Everybody, welcome to BSing with Sean K, episode 102. I am your host, Sean Neese. That's K-N-E-E-S-E. The K is silent. And no, it's not like niece to nephew. That's a different spelling, so therefore different spelling. Different meaning. It's a German name, and it's actually a Canese in German. But anyway, this is the second episode of the new year, and on this show, I talk with people who live outside the box, actors, comedians, bloggers, other podcasters, activists, and anybody who's kind of going after their passion and not just pursuing the typical 9-to-5 lifestyle. And on this episode, I talked to Boyce Allen, who is the host of Talk Music Talk with Boyce, which is another podcast that does long form interviews like I do. And in the episode, we get into what we both enjoy about doing long form interviews as opposed to shorter, more edited interviews. And he is also a musician and an author. And it was really cool to have this conversation because he really took the words out of my mouth when it came to describing what he enjoyed about interviewing people and doing the podcasts. And obviously, you know, he has his own style. I have my own style, but I feel like there's a bit of a similar approach we take, too, in certain ways, too. And he's also the host of the Strandcast, which is the official podcast for Strand Bookstore, which is similar to Talk Music Talk with Boyce, but only on Talk Music Talk, he's interviewing musicians. And on the Strandcast, he's talking to authors. And anyway, here's the conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. I guess where we would start with this is like I guess, like, how we met. Like, we met at a podcast meetup, and then you can go into what you do and, like, how you got started with podcasting and also music and writing you do, too.
Okay. So, wait, what was that group called? The meetup? That's been, what, 3 years or something now, or four?
Yeah, it's been a while. I think that was the only one I went to. It was, like, a podcaster's meetup in New York. I forget what it was called. You've been going consistently, or?
I went, I think, maybe one or two other times, and then there was, like, a long gap in between, and then it was always, like, if I was working, so I couldn't go anymore. But I haven't been shortly after we met. But I probably was into my podcast maybe, like, a year or two when I did it. So I was looking for tips at the time. But I started the podcast. Well, I just had the five-year anniversary. It was this past November, 2019, and I had celebrated 200 episodes, and I was telling, like, on that podcast how when I started, it kind of came out of, like, from depression, I guess you could say, because I was sleeping on a futon of someone I knew from my church at the time, and it was going to be temporary, and temporary ended up being 6 years, because I started working there, and then a job got laid off, so I was unemployed. And then I got depressed, and I had stopped going on social media because, you know, that can not necessarily help your mood, right? And so I asked something, said, why don't you just check out Facebook? So I go on Facebook, and I see an ad for MNN, which is a Manhattan Neighborhood Network, where you can do their public access, New York's public access channel. And then mine, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, remember you always want to do a talk show. That might be, maybe you can do it with that. So there was, I think that was a Tuesday that I saw the ad for it. It was going to be on that week on the Thursday. And there was an afternoon one, and then there was an evening one. I'm like, well, I'll go to the afternoon one. I mean, since I was unemployed, I, you know, had all the time in the world. So I get up to go for the afternoon one, and I was just so depressed. I started thinking, like, well, boys, you've never done a podcast before. You've never had a talk show. Yeah, you've done, you know, college radio, but that's not a talk show. It's just you by yourself. So what makes you think you can do this? Like, all this stinking thinking. So I did not go to the workshop for it and stayed in bed depressed. And but I knew there was another one that night, and I was just like, well, you got to go to that one, boys. You just got to go to that one, because I felt so bad for not going, because I believed it was, like, I needed to find out what was going to happen there, you know. So like, I was able to get out of my depression. I got dressed and went to that one, and like, I really see, like, that night's like when everything, like, opened up. Because I get there and it was just like jam packed with people. And first, I kind of regretted that, because I'm like, well, the afternoon one was probably not that packed, but it was just jam packed with people. And but there was this energy in the air of people, like, you know, wanting to do something creative. Like, you could really, it was really palpable. And like, I got excited about that. So I'm sitting there while they're going through the workshop and all the basics that you would need. Like, you have to take classes to be certified. How, you know, if you're going to do a show, you most likely need a crew. You need, you could get people from there, post up signs, all that. But a lot of moving parts to put together a video show. And a beautiful studio, you can record there if you wanted to. So like, everything was self-contained, and like, I'm getting excited about it. But as I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, well, that's a lot of work to a long-term project. I'd like to start something now, because I'm like a very impatient person. So I had been listening to podcasts probably maybe like 5, 6 years at that point. And I was like, well, why don't you do an audio, do a podcast, and you can work on that immediately and do that by yourself before you, while you work on the video show. And then you could have a video show and a podcast. Well, the video show never came, but that night was the creation of what would become Talk Music Talk. I didn't have a title for it, but as I was sitting there during the workshop, I knew then, like, okay, it's going to be a talk show, long form interviews, because that's my favorite thing to listen to. And it'll be somehow music related, talking to people connected to music. So that night, that's when everything started. And I had to turn in, like, the information so I could do the workshops. And, you know, so I didn't have a title, but I did have an idea for the show. So but that was the night that, you know, that Thursday, everything opened up. And, like, if that night hadn't opened up for me like that, if I had not even gone to, got out of bed and went, like, I don't know, you know, we probably wouldn't be talking right now.
So it's sometimes you just gotta motivate yourself, I guess. You gotta, even if you don't feel like reaching for something or doing anything, you just gotta do it anyway.
Yeah, because it was not the, I mean, it's the kind of person where I could still get out of bed and function, you know, go and do the things I like. But it was, I got so much in my head, like, you know, you can't do this, that, you know, it stopped me. Because, like, what if there was only that one session that day? You know, would I have gone another day? How long would I? Because it wasn't like they had these, like, you know, on a weekly basis or anything. So that's how the show was formed. And from there, you know, just trying to plan, you know, doing all the research. I mean, like, now, you know, there's much more books on podcasts and stuff. So there's a lot of going online, reaching out to podcasters, you know, asking how do they get started, you know, trying to find out equipment. And one of the things that was beneficial, that, you know, seems horrible at the time, was that, you know, even though I was sleeping on a futon with no bedroom, it was like, well, I can't record here, right? And, you know, my roommate would be gone during the day, which would have been a luxury if I had a room to record in. But like, in terms of getting equipment, I had researched this equipment that, where I could record, you know, on the go. So that's sort of, you know, I did a handful of interviews at my place then at the time. But that, like, opened things up to be able to travel to people. Because, like, when I would pitch people, you know, it's like, here's what the show's about, and my equipment is portable, so I can easily come to you. And I think that helped me in that, you know, people didn't have to leave their house to go to an interview. And I always knew that, you know, I want to do face-to-face interviews. I felt like, you know, there's something that happens there, that when you're, like, in the same room with people. But it's, you know, I still, to this day, I do mostly in, you know, in-person interviews and travel to people. And it just, like, really makes things easy. Like, if somebody's in town for a show, for a tour, I can go to them. I can go to people's hotels. I've gone to rehearsal rooms, like pretty much anywhere. And it's just like, that is something that was, I saw kind of like, oh, well, that's going to suck that I can't, you know, have a recording place that's regularly, you know, to go to. I mean, to have people come to, and then I have to travel, and that, you know, that ended up being a benefit.
Yeah, I guess it really, it does add a lot to do in-person interviews. I mean, we're doing a Skype interview now. I mean, for a while I was doing in-person, but then, you know, I just needed to take a break from, like, commuting to the city, like, every week to interview and stuff. Because, like, right now I'm in New Jersey, so it was getting a little rough with that. But I do think, like, in-person adds a lot, like, face-to-face.
Yeah.
Too. And also lawn form interviews. You mentioned you like lawn form interviews. That's the style I generally like to do. What is it about lawn form interviews that you enjoy as opposed to, I guess, like quicker, more edited interviews?
I get the it gives you a chance to stretch out, and that you can really get to know a lot about people. You wouldn't think, like, you know, in 40 minutes, an hour, that you could learn that much about people. But people will open up if you ask the right questions. You can, I sort of see it as telling a story, because, you know, I've written like novels in the past, and I sort of see it as like you can shape a story of someone's life, you know, like if you do an origin story from the beginning, middle, and end, and tell a story in real time with somebody's life, and by the questions you ask and how you're listening, and that, you know, I guess that you, and when we hear people's stories, that you can connect to it, and you know, maybe see something in yourself, or you something sparks something in you, and that really doesn't get a chance to happen in a 10-minute interview, because you just have to get straight to like whatever points. Like, there you're talking about somebody's new album, you know, that's pretty much all you're gonna get to do is talk about the album, not much to the build up. People have to get shorter answers to fit into the 10 minutes, but you know, it gives you, I like the build up, and you know, being able to take your time. I like being able to, you know, go on to side excursions, and you know, it's funny, like sometimes people are being interviewed and you're asking to talk about, you know, I interviewed somebody, we were talking about math, and you know, people will be like, you're interested in this, you really want to hear this, and you realize that when people are talking about things that they are excited about, that, you know, you hear that excitement. So, you know, I always knew the podcast wasn't just going to be about music, it would be, you know, music the umbrella, the person would be, you know, connected to music, but you know, I was open to whatever we talked about. So, you know, you could talk about math. You could talk about, you know, your childhood, you know, and we talk about your music. And that, you know, a 40-minute plus interview gives you a chance to do all that, and you don't have to feel rushed. You know, like I kind of hate, like, when interviews and people are like, okay, well, it has to be done by, you know, 12:05 or that's it, right? Because then it's like now you have to, like, rush to this point in that, you know, you really can't, like, just see where things go. And I like to keep things like sort of like a loose plot. Like I have I may have some things I want to talk about, but I'm like always open to what they might say, because it's like I never know what they're going to say, and there's tons of things that people say end up talking about that, you know, it's not in a press release, that, you know, you Google them all you want and you're not going to see it, and that you really get to discover these things inside that long form interview that you most likely would never get to discover, like, say, in a 10-minute interview. So that's why I like about, you know, it's probably the main thing is, like, to be able to tell a story with someone's life in, you know, in real time.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much just, like, said exactly why I – that's, like, exactly why I like doing lawn form interviews, too. Like, you know, we wouldn't have gotten all that details about you sleeping on the futon and then going into being a podcaster if this was just a short, you know – more edited interview.
Yeah, you'd have to speak more like in sound bites.
Yeah, and I guess that's more for like a newscast kind of show, and like I guess like I like more like, you know, like the Marc Maron lawn form stuff. It, like, who are some podcasters that influenced you, like lawn form interviewers?
Yeah, it's definitely Marc Maron was one, and you know, just for his interview style, that, you know, he can like stretch out and talk about things, like, you know, because say if he's interviewing a comedian. Yeah, what I liked about it is that even though I wasn't familiar with, like, you know, 99% of the comedians he was talking about, a lot of them were friends to him or friend of friends, the interviews were still interesting because you're learning about their lives. And like, that was an example to me, is that, you know, even people are listening to this interview with somebody I'm talking to, it's not necessary for them to know the person, and that, you know, it's not just going to be about music, and that, you know, it almost doesn't matter if you know the person. Like, if you can give a good interview, you know, it doesn't matter if you've never heard that person, because we all have, you know, a story to tell. So it's definitely Marc Maron for that, you know, and to not do it with comedy, but to do it with music, because that was my passion. You know, big Oprah fan, you know, so I like her, you know, long form interviews. Terry Gross, also a fan of her. Who else? Good. You know what else I like too? No one ever talks about Dave Davies. He's always like the guest host for Terry Gross on Fresh Air, so I like him a lot too. Yeah, but those are some of the bigger ones, the main ones I was listening to and continue to listen to.
I guess it's becoming kind of a new thing, I guess, long form. Like that's, yeah. Because more people are, because you can kind of listen to it on the go, like if you're working out or like on your way to work or stuff like that. So, because like, since it's portable, I guess it's easier to listen to like longer things now.
Yeah, yeah. You can like stretch it, like you can listen to an hour interview, you know, first of your morning commute, maybe lunch, then wrap it up, you know, when you're coming home. That, you know, and you can actually get the full story, you know, you've listened to the full life story in one day, right? And doing whatever you want, like, you know, while you're working out, which I think is probably one of the reasons why podcasting has taken off, is that it's not something that demands you just kind of, you know, it's not like watching a video where you have to watch the video and sit there and do that. That you can do other things while you're listening to a podcast. It's like the perfect multitasking.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you said like you don't even have to know like who the person is. Like I think the first interview I heard you did was with Nellie McKay, who I hadn't heard of, but then I still the conversation was very interesting. I remember then that got me interested in checking out like more of her music. Like sometimes if you hear about like the person's life, then you want to check out like their art or their music or what they do, even if you haven't heard of them before.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like the goal is. I mean, I usually include a song. And I put it at the end purposely because, you know, if someone goes into, well, I don't, you know, listen to the thing that people are like, oh, I listen to all kinds of music except for, you know, rap and country. It's like, you know, if I'm like, oh, well, I'm interviewing this country artist, and then you hear the music at the top of the show, if you don't like their music, that might, you know, sway you in one direction or the other, or you may just like turn off. If the music's interspersed, you may, you know, okay, you just broke up the interview to play some of the music. I'm hoping that with the interview, you'll be so excited about, you know, you enjoyed the conversation, you like what they had to say, if they talked about them, you know, they talked about the music, that by the end of the show, you are excited to hear the song, and it's like you didn't have to take any extra steps by, you know, going on Spotify or wherever you listen to music. You know, you hear the music right then and there, and that hopefully that will open you up to want to go to, you know, Spotify or Bandcamp and to check out whatever else they're doing. So it's like, that's why I always like, you know, put their website, you know, best place for them to check out their music and stuff. And, you know, so it's about the story of the person, and like, you could just stop there, but also to get people excited about hearing this person's music or reading their book or whatever, you know, to connect with whatever they're doing.
And what has it been like promoting your podcast and marketing it?
I feel like I need to get better. I would love to have like somebody to help with social media, like in growing an audience. It's like, you know, I do the, you know, every week I, you know, post it and do pictures and, you know, always take a picture with the guests and post that on social media. And, you know, probably one of the more helpful things has been like, you know, in doing a podcast, it's not just by yourself, is that you're able to take advantage of the fact that whoever you interviewed will most likely share the interview, and that if it's a good experience for them, people are like, you know, pretty willing to share. So that's been helpful too. It's like, you know, kind of connecting with this audience that you didn't previously have before, your person you interviewed, their audience. So that's been a lot of relying on that, but I definitely would like to get better at it. I'm not quite sure how to do that. And, yeah, so that's like, you know, maybe a goal for 2020 is to do that. But yeah, that's pretty much, it's like, you know, just putting out there on social media and like, you know, hoping for word of mouth.
And you also do the Strandcast, right? That's another podcast you're doing now. Like, how did you get into that?
Yeah, that's the process for the official podcast of Strand Bookstore. The process for it started in 2018, like late, I think it was like October, November of that year. I went to the Vice President Eddie Sutton. Well, I'd been thinking like, okay, you know, I'd been working there almost a year and it hadn't occurred to me. I was like, well, why doesn't Strand, you know, a lot of bookstores have podcasts, but their podcasts or usually whatever events they have, and they just, you know, take the audio from that and I make that a podcast. And I was like, well, why doesn't Strand have a bookstore? It's like, it's what, 93 years old or something like that. You know, it's known all over the world. It's a destination spot for many people when they come to the city. And I go, why don't I, you know, pitch a podcast to them? And, you know, I have my own equipment. I've already been doing it, you know, 4 years at that point. You know, they wouldn't have to do anything extra to stuff or promote it. So, you know, that was part of my promotion of my proposal for it, was that, you know, everything's self-contained. I would just hand you a show and I'll just interview authors. Same format. So pretty much it's the same format as my show, but, you know, I just different music and I'm interviewing authors. But yeah, so it started off with a proposal, met with Eddie. I was nervous, you know, the big boss. And I'm like, you know, it was a 4-page proposal. And I'm like, I hope he likes it. And he's like, you know, flipping through and he's like, oh, this looks great. And he's like, I'll get back to you. And it was like a week to the day he got back to me, thumbs up. And then, you know, so that was the process. You know, working within a company, you know, things take longer. As there was like interviews that I recorded, it was like months later, they didn't come out. But yeah, we just released episode 10 last week. But that's been a great process because it's been, you know, sort of the same as doing my own show. But I'm thinking that, you know, it's a book audience. It's an audience of people who know the store. So, you know, trying to, you know, be myself, but within kind of a slightly different framework, and that having to read a book, you know, that's a different beast than just talking about somebody's music. So I feel like, you know, in some ways I'm still finding my feet in doing the interviews and making it, you know, bringing all of me to the interview and not just thinking about, you know, this audience out there that, you know, loves the store and, you know, may check out the podcast, you know, because of the store. As opposed to, you know, they hear about this podcast, but they have a connection already with the store and that this sort of extends their connection with it. So it's like, that's been my goal, is like, you just being more and more of myself and not holding back in a way, you know, which I'm not, which I don't think I'm doing or intentionally doing on my own show, but don't want to do that on, you know, for the Strands podcast.
And has it drawn more people to the Talk Music Talk?
Yeah, there's like, yeah, I've been getting more listeners through that. And it's like, and it's funny, like, you know, I've been doing this for 5 years and, you know, more people listen to a Strand episode than my own episode. But, you know, it's connected to me doing, you know, so it's like I'm mentioning my name, you know, at the top of the interview, at the end, and my website. And then when we send out the social newsletter, you know, they have my information then. So I have been getting people from, it looks like my numbers have gone up since doing the podcast. So, which that was one of my goals, too, is to hope that it would help with my own podcast and what I'm doing, too.
So, what are some of the things you've learned as an interviewer over the years? And, like, what ways have you improved, and in what ways do you think you can still improve in the future?
Recent improvement, someone had left. I'm probably not going to look at comments on iTunes anymore. as many people probably do. And it was, you know, it wasn't necessarily a bad review, but someone said, like, you know, they enjoyed the interviews. This is for Strandcast. Maybe 3 episodes in, and they were like, they enjoyed the interviews, but they got tired of the hosts going, yeah. And I had been thinking about, okay, boys, maybe you want to lessen those up. Because, like, I feel in the moment when you're sitting cross face-to-face, you sort of want to do that thing people know you're listening to. But you can achieve that by just nodding your head, right, and smiling. People, you know. Know that you're listening. So I have been working on that for maybe like a cleaner interview that hopefully that's not distracting. But like when I first got that, I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe they put that out there and everybody can read that. I'm saying, And it was like, you can tell in the interview, like it really irritated them that I was doing that. So that's something I've been working with, working on. What else I've been working on? Just trying to, you know, get better at interviewing by listening to other people's interviews. What else I do? I think I've grown in that being more comfortable with different type of interviews that were interviewing them four years in, that I know, like, with the first, if I would have done them the first year, I would not have been able to handle, like, people who are nervous and they're not giving you a lot to work with. Because before I interview people, I always say, like, you know, this is more conversational, not just straight Q&A. So, you know, you can sort of stretch out your answers. But if someone's nervous, that makes that kind of hard to do. So, you know, being able to put people at ease and, like, you know, still trying to get a hopefully a good interview with somebody who's nervous. Because a lot of times people start out nervous, but like 10, 15 minutes in, they warm up and, you know, they are able to talk, you know, quite well. So, you know, making people feel comfortable, I think I've gotten better at that. So I think those are some of the things I've been working on. And just, you know, being even a better listener and, you know, asking even better questions. And like I was saying with Strandcast and just in general with my own podcast, just being the most, I was just thinking about it, being the most you can be, not holding back. Like if there's something you're thinking, just say it. Don't worry about what the listener is thinking. If that's how you feel, to say it, you know, if it's not offending anybody, you know, say what you have to say and being open like that.
And do you find sometimes, like with some people, it's harder to get them to open up? Like they'll give quicker answers, and then that becomes a challenge too, or?
Yeah, so that you'll see that, like, if there's a, usually I try to tell people in advance, like a 40, 45 minute interview, and, you know, I'm happy to go longer if it's going great, but sometimes you see that and you'll see, like, it's a 30 minute interview. That's probably what happened, that the person was giving me really short answers because they were nervous, and, you know, and you have to do it. It's like when, you know, someone's like, yeah, and that's what happened, you almost have to follow up with what they're telling them what they were thinking. Oh, so you were thinking that, you felt like that, you know, to try to draw answers out of them. But, you know, it's like, I think a lot of times once people warm up that they do get better in answering the questions, and that it's just more nervousness. Like if it's their first interview or they don't really, you know, not that wild about interviews, you know, you're a new person they have not met, you know, that could be a factor. Because, you know, I see every interview is like, you know, this relationship between the interview and the interviewee, and that you never know what that relationship is going to be until you sit down across from people, and that, you know, you never know what their day was before that, right? That day before, the hours before the interview, they may have gotten bad news, you know, they could be in a bad mood, good mood, whatever, and that can affect the interview, and that it's this growing live thing that happens in that moment and will never be the same again. You can redo an interview and it's a different interview, even though it's with the same person, and that's constantly so changing. And I like that part, like the live element of the interview, because I don't stop an interview unless, you know, the mailman rings the doorbell, right? So it's just straight through, and I see it as like, we're recording, this is live, right? I'm only going to edit out mistakes. So I like the fact that, you know, anything can happen in that moment. You don't know what they're going to be talking about. You know, what your question will prompt them. And a lot of times questions prompt memories from people and things they haven't thought about in a long time. And that gives you a place to go. So, you know, that's why, you know, probably another thing I like about it is how it's almost improvisational, and it's in the moment. You have to be mindful, and that each time is different and unique. And, you know, hopefully people enjoy that, and that they do feel comfortable in that moment.
Yeah, and I guess that's another thing that's good about long form. Like, it kind of captures a moment, like, for whether it's like a, like one of the better ones, or maybe one of the, I guess not the, one of the shorter interviews, like you said, that didn't really go anywhere. Like, it captures a moment, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. And even if you get a sense of the person, like I interview, I won't say their name, but I did an interview a few weeks ago, and the person was short, like very short answers, a short interview. But it's like, I really love their music, and, you know, so I was excited to talk to them about that. And it's like, but you got a real sense of their personality. And, like, that's something else, too, is that I want people to finish listening to an interview, and they get a sense of who that person is. And that came through in the interview. And she did get less nervous as the interview went along. And, like, you know, ended up being, I'm like, I like the interview. It's not an interview. I don't release interviews that I'm embarrassed to release. So that's how I go on that. So even if the person is nervous, even if they're giving short answers, you know, if it gives a sense of their personality, and I'm fine with releasing that interview. Right?
And have people ever gotten, like, angry that you didn't release their interview for whatever reason, and then you had to explain, like, oh, let's redo it? Or what would usually... How did they feel, like, I guess, when you didn't, there was, like, episodes you didn't release? Was it something they didn't want released either, or?
I have not had anyone not want to release. Well, there was one. This was early on. Yeah, there was a guy in Pittsburgh. He didn't want the interview released because he said he talked about too many personal things. And that was like 5 years. And then, you know, I'm like, OK, I understand that. And then like a year later, I revisited with him and he said maybe they didn't get back to me. So I sort of dropped it. So I still have the interview and I've not listened to it. So I don't know like what my opinion would be of it now. Other interviews I've not, it's only been a handful. Other interviews I've not released. Someone got back to me and said they understood, you know, because it really wasn't a great interview. So I think they realized that it wasn't great either. And then most recently last year, someone it was just like, he was very long-winded. I was not enjoying myself. He talked in like huge paragraphs and, you know, I couldn't even get a word in edgewise, you know, edgewise.
Not sure.
Okay. I couldn't even get a word in on my podcast to, you know, ask questions because he would not stop talking the entire time. And I did have to like, you know, like, hey, you know, I don't think this is going to work for the podcast. Sorry about that. And then he wanted to like, well, can you just give me the audio and I'll cut out your parts and just use my parts? And I think, well, that makes no sense, right? And, you know, I thought, I'm like, well, let me get back to you. And I thought, I'm like, you know, I really don't want my interview out there with, you know, he's going to do whatever he wants with it. So I did say no, and he was kind of like back and forth, you know, like, you know, I went out of my way to do this. And I'm thinking, well, I went out of my way, too. I, you know, had to leave my home and did the interview before I went to work, you know, an hour to get from my place to your place. So it's like, yeah, it was kind of mutual, you know. So there was back and forth where he was like pretty angry about it. Because my ultimate answer was, no, I'm not going to give you the interview. There's another interview, you know, most the other times people just didn't respond. There was an interview I did with somebody, and I went to do the interview, and they were like, well, I was setting up, they were like, oh, you mind if I eat my lunch? I'm like, no, no problem. And they're, we, you know, they finish eating, we start recording. Whatever they ate was giving them acid reflux. So the, every, like, they'd say a sentence, and then they would and say a sentence or two. And I'm, like, thinking, like, oh, my God, I can't air this interview. They're, like, just, like, clearing their throat the entire interview. And they were long-winded. It was boring. So there were many reasons not to release it. And I'm, like, and so I told them, like, you know, well, I wouldn't be able to edit out, you know, whatever you were doing after you ate. And I never heard back from them. But, you know, what are you going to do, Sean, right? Yeah, I do everything but the actual audio editing. So what I do is like I after I listen to a show, well, I mean after I record the show, I listen to it and you know for the time codes like any mistakes and I have the time codes written for that, and then I give that to my audio editor with all the files of the songs, the audio interview, my introduction, the outro for it, and give him all that, and then he puts the show together for me.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, with editing, I just kind of been. You know, I've been learning as I go. I mean, I did take, like, some classes in college about, like, audio editing and everything. But most of I kind of just learned by doing. I mean, it's especially, like, with a podcast, I don't know, it's probably more challenging with, like, editing. I think it's more challenging with, like, editing music and, like, the different tracks. Like, the podcast.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, but, I mean, that's kind of been, like, learn as I go with that. I don't know, but you, I guess you found it. I guess that's something you find like I guess difficult to do on your own, or
that, like... I never wanted to do it, Sean. You know, I've always been a firm believer. If there's something you don't want to do, like,
yeah,
you know, pay somebody to do it who could do it better. You know, whether it's like, you know, do I want to do laundry or do I want to have somebody do the laundry for me and I pick it up the next day, right?
Yeah.
So think of the hours you save on doing that. You know, maybe you have to pay a little more, but you know, valuable time. And I knew, like, at the beginning of the start of the show, like, I'm going to have to learn how to edit. That's gonna take me more time to keep me from doing a show because, as I said, I'm an impatient person. Why don't I try to find somebody who can do it? And it's like, you know, I found somebody who can give me a show, like, you know, in a day or two. It's like, it's out of my hands. You know, I've listened to the show, which is important to me because, like, I may have one perception of the show while I'm doing the interview, but it's in listening to the interview that it gives me the information to write my introduction. I get to see, like, you know, kind of an aerial view of the show and, like, you know, any themes, which is what I usually pull out for the introduction, and that, you know, so I can use that. So it's very valuable to me, like, if there's any, like, you know, ticks I want to work on, I can hear that and, like, you know, okay, maybe you should have asked that question differently or better. you know, so it becomes like, you know, instructional for me. So like, there's a lot of value in me listening to it, but it's like, I don't need to actually edit it to, you know, get that. Cause in a sense I am editing, I'm just not doing the technical part of the editing. And so I knew I'm the type of person that I would rather just give that to somebody, and that I really didn't have a desire to learn that, because it's like I can hand him off a show and then start working on another show. And I, you know, get it back from him, it's done, and then now it can be posted. And that just saves me this stuff. And, like, you know, he has, like, saved my ass in many occasions where, you know, I usually people are like, sometimes people go, oh, can we record in a cafe around the corner from me? You know, in the beginning, you know, I would say yes because I didn't think I would lose the interview. And then, you know, it come to learn, like, no, and it's just like, no, well, I can't control the sound of a cafe. So I did an interview with somebody, and, like, we were in a cafe, and there was walk-in, you know, they said, oh, this is a quiet place to record, you know, before we did the interview. Walk-in, the place is playing music, of course, and the speaker, so I'm like, well, okay, they're going to be doing more talking than me, so I'll have them facing away from the speaker, and the music will be behind me. And, you know, you could, of course, hear that, the music in the interview. I don't know what my editor did. His name's Landon. And Landon gave me back the interview, and I recorded on two separate tracks. He had completely removed the music from it, or reduced it so low that it still sounded great. You couldn't even tell that we were in a cafe. So I don't know at what point I would have had the skill level to be able to do that. Like, would I have just scraped that interview because, you know, I wouldn't have known what to do. So also, you know, someone who has years and years of expertise, why not let them do that? And they could turn it around quickly and save me the time. So,
yeah, I did one interview in a bar, and mm-hmm. I did another one. But the bar one was in, like, a back room where nobody else was, yeah. And you could, like, faintly hear the stuff way in the background, so it added more of an ambience to it.
Yeah, I don't mind the ambient. Like, if it's ambient, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but if it gets overbearing, then it's too much.
Yeah, or if you're going to be interrupted to, like, you know, I've done it, and, you know, somebody wanted to go and eat and do it like that, we had to be interrupted by the waitress. Because I think that there's a couple of things happen. There's, like, this spell that happens in an uninterrupted interview, and it's just you two, that if you have people interrupting, that it breaks that spell. Like, I was interviewing somebody, and, you know, we're having a great conversation. We're getting ready to get really deep, talking about some stuff. And his dog was, like, crying to go out to the bathroom, right? So we had to, like, stop the interview while this was happening, and, you know, walk the dog. I'm out walking the dog with them, and, like, that took us off, like, by 10, 15 minutes, and, like, could not get back into where we left off. Like, and it was just being, and I was very disappointed because we were really getting to something good, and it was like, you know, that broke the spell, you know. Also, like, having other people in the room breaks the spell, that people can be, you know, and it's not consciously that they're doing it, but people will, they're almost performing because they know the person. Like, they, you know, like, oh, can my friend come? And it's like the friend's in the room, and they're performing almost, or reacting to the friend being in the room, because they have a relationship with the friend or partner or whoever that you don't. So that's why, like, when interviews too, I prefer just to have, you know, just us. And there's been situations where I've had to say, like, say that, which, you know, in the beginning I didn't feel comfortable, but, you know, as I've gone through over the years, you know, I had to do it a few weeks ago, say to someone, you know, like, you know, just us in the room, you know, because that creates a different interview when you don't have other factors, and trying to remove as many other factors, like being interrupted or having someone else in the room as well, which is one of Mark Maron's rules, is that it only can be him and, you know, the interviewer, that they can't have their publicist, you know, if it's someone big, they can't have their publicist and team in the room with them also. Because I think, I've not heard him say that, but I imagine that's why, is that, you know, people react differently when they're in the room with other people. They may not necessarily answer as honest, but they're answering because they have this history with that other person and you don't.
Yeah, and then it kind of creates, I guess, a more awkward vibe in a way to have that extra person that's not being in it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I interviewed somebody and they were, and I'm saying somebody because, you know, I don't want to say the person, people's names, right? I don't know if they'd be comfortable with that, right? But, you know, it's like his wife was in the room while we were doing the interview, and he was talking about somebody he dated in college, and I saw him just for a split second. She couldn't see it, but he, like, cut his eyes over her, and then, like, he sort of changed direction of what he was going to say. And it was because she was in the room. And I'm like, damn, why is she in the room? She's sitting there just listening to the interview, like, you know, she's at a performance or something like that, and I'm thinking, why are you in this room? You don't need to be in the room. So I guess, you know, that's probably something too. It's like over the years getting more confidence to say things like, you know, it only can be us in the room, or, you know, I'm not going to record in a public place where I can't control the sound, you know. Or now, after having the interview with the person who just went on and on like that, to now have the confidence to say, like, you know, to stop the interview and go, you know, there's a lot I want to ask you. I'm excited to talk to you, but I'm going to need you to, like, to sort of compress your answers so I can get more in, you know, because we only have limited time to do this. Like, to feel the confidence to say that. So that's probably something, too. It's, like, getting more confident over the years, not just interviewing, but, like, you know, just, like, personally becoming more confident as a result of the podcast.
And have you ever interviewed two people at once, like two people from a band, have you found that that's more of a challenge, or do you like it as much as just interviewing someone one-on-one?
I don't like that as much. I mean, I've had some good situations with it, and, like, I wouldn't pass it up. But again, with that, you have two people who have a history with each other, and that you don't have that history with them. And something also I've seen that people rely, if you're just talking one-on-one with a person and they have to sort of think about an answer and you don't say anything and try to, like, you know, fill in the answer for them, they will work out that answer for themselves, right? But a lot of times if you're interviewing two people, they'll look at the other person to finish their thought or to keep talking, or that person will jump in. And it's in that when people are working through an answer that you can really get some good stuff, and that you may not get that if another person's there, like, you know, to save them. And I've had that happen where the other person jumps right in and you're like, no, no, if they would have worked this out, you could have got something deeper. So it's like my preference is not, or if I do approach bands, like, I'll even say, like, you know, well, just the songwriter, the lead singer or the main songwriter, like, I'm going to be interviewing somebody in a few weeks who reached out to me, and he writes all the songs for the band, and he reached out, so I'm just going to interview him, even though he's not the vocalist. And it's like, you know, I could ask to do an interview with the vocalist, but it's like I prefer the one-person interview. Or anything maybe in the future that if I do more than one person, like to do them separately and then put the interviews together. Like I interviewed the Bright Smoke, and they're a duo. And so I did an interview. The one guy who does the production, he had a project out by himself, and then they were releasing a project together. So I did a short interview with them together talking about the joint project. And then she left, and then I just did the interview with him. And did a full, and that, like, was great because it was like, it was just me and him in an interview, and, you know, probably opened up and talked about things in a way that, you know, if the other person was there, we would not have.
Do you try to keep a conversational feel with your interviews? And if what have you learned as far as, like, finding a balance between just a formal interview asking questions and, you know, also having banter in the podcast mm-hmm. episode as well?
I like the conversational because I think it keeps it open to things that can happen, because as I'm researching people, because it's like you could research someone like I interviewed Vijay Iyer, and they have, like, you know, just tons and tons and tons. They've done a lot, you know, they've won all kinds of awards. They've been this place, that place, an amazing career. And you see all this stuff about them, but then you can interview somebody who, you know, they have an EP out and they have nothing online other than the EP. So it's like everything you're going to learn about them, you're going to learn in that interview. So you can't even really, or at least I don't know how you would prepare, like, you know, 20 questions for that. And I think sometimes too, it's like in having, like, all these questions that you may get locked into all the questions. And I like the sort of opening. So I have like my opening question, but usually beyond that, it's like, I don't know where it's going to go. So I have the opening question. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe, and I'm, as I'm researching people or listening to the music, I'm thinking of how to start the interview. So I'm basically like, oh, like, how do I start this interview? What would be a good way to go? And then my end goal is to get to whatever their new project is. So it's like, I'm turning, what is, there's something where you can sort of see pictures in your head, like talking, I forget the name of it. There's some condition. Or people see colors and stuff.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Not like a photographic.
No.
Yeah.
But it's like I sort of can see, like, the shape of the interview in my head, which is kind of weird. But it's like, you know, getting to the end, and, like, how do I get from the beginning to the end? And it doesn't matter if, you know, we take little side roads and like the, we're still getting to our destination. So, you know, other than that, I like the conversational because I don't know what I'm going to discover, and not having all the questions keeps me, you know, in that moment of stuff to discover. And that, you know, because often people do talk about stuff that, you know, wasn't in the press release and you couldn't find anywhere online. And I don't know if I would be able to do this. Like, I don't even know how to do all those questions. And more for Strand, I do, because I'm reading a book where I'll have all the questions. But I read the questions beforehand. I read the questions over and over and, like, just sort of get them in the head, in my head. But then when I sit down with them, I don't have the questions out. The questions just are sort of in my head. And, again, I'm coming up with my first question. And then as we're having this conversation, some of those questions I wrote down will seep into my head and they're kind of my safety net, but I'm never like relying on those questions to like get, you know, to do the interview.
Yeah, actually that's kind of my process as well. You know, just having a general idea of where the interview is going to go rather than writing it out question by question. And I've gone back and forth a bit with whether like having a list of questions or not, but I find that it definitely works better when I do research beforehand and I have a general like idea of where the interview is going to go, but I don't over plan it and just like go question by question, because then there's less listening. It's harder to listen to what the person says, because then you're thinking more about what you're going to say next or what you're going to ask next.
Yeah. Because I know just from working events at Strand, like a lot of times people will do, I think because they're uncomfortable doing an event by themselves, they want to have somebody else interview them, and they'll just have like a friend interview them, and that person's not really a great interview. So you see them with their sheet of paper with the questions, they'll ask them the question and then the person answers, and then they just move right on to the next question. And it's like there was like 8 things the person said during their answer that you could have approached, and that you missed these golden opportunities. And I think if you're going to do a more conversational interview, you really have to pay attention to people's answers, because within those answers are more questions that you can get, and that you, while you don't necessarily need to have like, you know, a sheet of questions, you know, I think more maybe could be helped with just having themes or things you're interested in talking about. Like if you want to have those things out, that could be helpful. But in terms of just like getting locked into your questions, that it may reduce your listening if you're doing, you know, because this isn't like we're doing a, you know, an article for the New York Times where you have to have these certain things, you know, handled in the conversation. It's like, I can go anywhere I want, you know, I'm going to talk about your new album, right? But other than that, it's like, it doesn't matter what else we talk about, you know, we get to the new album, right?
Yeah, because it's going, I guess you and I are both going for that kind of talking to the person as a person, like on a personable level, rather than like, I'm here with so and so, and these are my questions. You know, like more like a, not like a newscast kind of format, more of a, I guess, long form, more personable kind of interview.
Yeah, and it's not even like it's like a health show where, you know, well, I want to talk about, you know, their book has 10 points to, you know, lose weight, that where you got to get through those 10 points. It's like, it's much more open, you know, to what can happen in that type of, in this type of interview.
And I did want to ask more about your music, like how you got started with music and everything. I know you're originally from Pittsburgh. Were you involved in the music scene there? Like how did your music and interest in music develop?
The music didn't start with kind of a later thing, because, you know, I did music in high school in terms of just the band stuff. So I was a drum major, and I also played trombone for a few years. So that was pretty much limited to that. And it wasn't until I moved to New York, I was working at Urban Outfitters in Pittsburgh, and then I transferred from there to a store in New York. And maybe I've been there about a month. Yeah, I think it was about a month. And we had got a guitar kit in. It was a guitar, electric guitar, amp, and with the strap and all that. And I didn't know at the time, it was probably best that I didn't know that this was like one of the crappiest instruments that you could get. It's like the action was high, you could slip your arm between the action, like, you know, you pressed out on the strings, your fingers were hurt because the strings were so high up. But it was best that I did not know that. But I had such, you know, I'm really big, I'm very woo-woo, I'm really, really big on listening to my instincts. When I saw that, I was on my break, I saw that instrument, that guitar kit, and like I would get, you know, half off on it because of my discount. I felt such a visceral reaction that I have to have this instrument. It just like connected to me in such a way. And I was like, well, you just moved up here, boys. You really shouldn't be spending your money on this. This is a frivolous thing. You know, you're still looking for a place to live. And like, I kept thinking about it all day. And I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to buy the guitar. And, you know, bought it. Didn't regret it. And then I was like, well, do I want to learn how to play guitar? Because I've always wanted to learn, but never did it. Do I learn how to play the guitar on my own? Or do you know I get an instructor? And, you know, kind of knowing myself, I thought, well, I would benefit best from an instructor. So I was looking around on Craigslist, and, you know, I went to a couple people, didn't feel right. And then I found a person, Alan, and we hit it off. And, you know, I started doing lessons with him every week. And he would give me assignments. And one of the assignments after a few weeks was, you know, I want you to start writing a song, which was like completely scary to me. Like, you know, I was wanting to write songs and, you know, I even would come up with melodies on my own. But he was like, I want you to write a song. So he was like, I want a verse and a chorus. And, you know, that's your assignment for next week. Plus, he gave me my new chords to learn and all that. So the week passes and I was so intimidated by writing the song. All I did was study my lessons with the chords. I come into him and I'm like, you know, he's like, where's your song? I'm like, oh, well, you know, I was busy doing this and getting that done. And he's like, oh, that's bullshit, boys. He's like, next week, I want you to come in verse and a chorus. You don't even got to write the whole song, just a verse and a chorus. So up for the challenge of next week. I do that, and it was like the most amazing experience because not only is he was a guitar teacher, he would also do demos and stuff recording in his studio. So he had like a full studio in his apartment. He would, you know, play the chords and sing the melody to him, and he would make a demo for me. And it was like that was like, oh, well, I have all these demos. I could make an album. So every week I started writing a new song. So it was this great challenge of like, coming, you know, I wouldn't have maybe all the full lyrics, but I would have like, you know, the melody for the verse, the chorus, a bridge and all that. And then like in 2 hours, we had this great chemistry where he would lay down an entire demo. You know, I'd record the vocals or, you know, scratch vocals, and I'd have a complete, you know, song. And all those demos end up being what I would use for the musicians for my first album, How to Be an Adult. And, you know, it all started, you know, from him, you know, having this producer who could, a guitar teacher who also was a producer. So that's how the music started with that.
And then the second album you did on an iPad? You recorded it
on an iPad? Yeah, yeah. I got an iPad from after working on the first album and was just reading so much about how, you know, there was all these apps. And that was why I actually bought the iPad, because there was all these music apps that you could do. You know, GarageBand had been added to the app, iPad app. And, you know, all these other apps, and I started making music on there, and I knew, okay, I wanted to do something more electronic. And because, you know, I had limited experience, I'm like, well, okay, well, I'll bring in the studio a keyboard just to sort of augment the sound for that album. And that was Get Me Audio. So that one has more of a electronica feel, while the other first album was more singer-songwriter, like a power pop type thing. Like, because some of my influence was like, you know, Morrissey, big fan of his, and the Smiths. And, you know, so that had more of that sound. So the album's definitely up to different sounds, but it's like, you know, I was still writing all the vocal melodies because I can't read music, but it's like, you know, having like either a guitar teacher can make the demos for you or using an iPad, you know, that allowed me to sort of create the music on my own.
Yeah, I guess, do you think, it seems like maybe there's a little less, like nowadays there's a little less focus on, I guess, being signed to a label like there used to be, because now people can put their stuff out there more themselves. Yes. With like Bandcamp or Spotify. So it's more, now it's more just about recording it and putting it out there, as rather than, oh, we got to get signed to a label. We got, yeah.
Because a lot of people, it's like, if you still hold that dream, you may never get signed to a label. You know, because I talked to, when I was looking for people to work on the album, and I can't remember his name, this guy's name, I would love to look it up and see what's going on with him. But he had released an album in England, in the UK, and it sort of took off and then it completely flopped. And he owed, you know, he was still getting, like, you know, invoices from the record company about, you know, for the advance, because, you know, he never earned out the advance. And he had moved to the States and he was making music, but he's like, I just got to get signed to a label again. He's like, I know it went bad. you know, but the dream is I just got to get on a label because, you know, being on a label just meant this thing. So to not even release music because it has to be on a label, it's like, well, how much great art, great music, you know, or even just the expression of yourself and sharing with people who may enjoy it will be, you know, curtailed and suppressed because, you know, you have in your head of what labels are. And it's like when labels aren't even that anymore, you know, they're struggling to be, you know, but they're not the great gatekeepers that they once were, that, you know, now you can just put music out, you know, for better or worse, right? You know, anything can be put out there, but it's like, it doesn't stop you from where, like, my music's never going to be heard because it's not going to be on a major label.
Yeah. And you can monetize it even online. Like, you know, like get a lot of hits on YouTube or Spotify or Bandcamp.
Yeah. Or if you don't monetize it from the actual music, because, I mean, like, Spotify, people aren't making that much music. But, like, if you're building an audience on Spotify, that audience, you know, could very well come and see your shows where, you know, then they may buy, you know, T-shirt or your album there, right? So, you know, they're not buying them. You're not making anything from Spotify, but, you know, just getting that exposure puts you out there, you know, to help with, say, your shows.
Yeah, but I think on Spotify, it's like you get enough plays or follows, like it you still get like a revenue on it.
Yeah. But it's like, is it 0.00 something like that?
So. Oh, so it's like a very small amount. Yeah.
Yeah. So even like a lot of plays, like as an independent artist, and it's not enough money to like live on or anything. So then hopefully it plays out in other ways that exposure gives you an audience that will come to shows or, you know, go to your band camp and buy your music.
And you're also a writer. What can you say about the books you've written and what got you interested in that?
I always wanted to write books and, like, you know, lifelong reader. So, you know, that started from, like, writing fiction and, you know, talking about major labels that, you know, when I wrote my first book, The Daughters of a Mother, it was going to be like, well, I got to send it to a publisher. So I did the whole thing route with going, sending it to agents, because then it became, well, you just can't send to publishers directly. They're not going to look at you, major publishers, so you need an agent. So it was like, you know, sending your a proposal or, you know, a proposal, like a query letter, and has like a description of the book and saying, you know, hopefully you will want to represent me, be one of your clients. And, you know, so I did that and, like, you know, just rejection after rejection. And so that's when I decided to, you know, self-release the books and, you know, did that for, you know, 3 books of my own and a book that I edited. And yeah, so it was sort of like that. You know, I had the dream of being with, you know, a major publisher and, like, you know, that would be the only way to get to it. And it became like, you know, well, why not explore, you know, releasing on my own, you know, and a lot of that inspiration came from, like, you know, people in music have been, you know, like the punk thing, you've been DIY doing it yourself, you know, you don't wait for someone else to, you know, approve you, you just put it out there yourself. Yeah. And, you know, so, like, I didn't get the miss, I had the experience still of, you know, people reading the book, you know, enjoying the book, you know, doing lots of book readings and signings, that, you know, even though I wasn't on a major publisher, if I only held that dream that that was the only way to go, I would have missed out on, you know, all the wonderful experiences I've had, you know, of, you know, getting my work out there and people reading it and connecting with it and, you know, doing events. And, you know, I think that's part of my personality, is like to not wait around for people to approve me. Like, you know, I'm just going to do it myself, you know, which fits very much, you know, with podcasting, where you don't have to wait for someone to approve your podcast. You can put the podcast out there yourself and, you know, it's, you know, what happens happens, right?
Yeah.
And like now it's like, you know, I haven't written a book in a long time because I had a writer's block, and then which got filled by, you know, doing the music, and then it got filled by doing the podcasting. But it's like I want to write a memoir now, so it's like I've been taking lots of notes. So that's a goal for this year, is to work on the memoir.
Yeah. And I guess is it hard to, would you say it's hard to make it big as a podcaster? Because I noticed, I guess a lot of the more famous podcasts seem to be from people who were famous in other ways. Like Marc Maron, I guess, was more famous in comedy, got famous through comedy.
Yeah.
Same with Joe Rogan. He got famous through hosting Fear Factor and also He was a UFC announcer and also a comedian and actor.
But, I guess it is more of a challenge because you don't, you're not coming in. I believe anything is possible, but you don't have, if you're just starting in podcasting, you don't have the built-in audience. You know, because my audience has been, you know, slowly, like, growing. Like, there's been constant growth. And, like, you know, it's been helpful with doing the Strandcast. But, yeah, that is the challenge of, like, getting your podcast out to more people and, you know, trying to get recognized and, you know, people, you know who you are. But, yeah, it's definitely the challenge of, like, if you're not coming into it. So many podcasters come in and they already have the built-in audience. But, you know, I think, like, you know, you put great content. Like, you'll never regret putting out stuff that you're proud of, and that's a benefit in itself, and that, you know, all the great people that, you know, I get to hear all this amazing music and listening to more music than I would have did prior to having a podcast, because I'm constantly seeking new music and experience. You know, I've made, you know, friends through doing the podcast and, you know, going out to shows. So it's like, you know, while the monetary part has not come yet from it, it's all these other experiences that, you know, that makes it so wonderful that, you know, even without the money there, it's still wonderful. And that, you know, I've gotten through the podcast, you know, I've done editing for 33 and a third books, and that came as a result of interviewing their authors. You know, so I've gotten gigs from it. You know, doing events at Strand came from the podcast. Doing the Strand podcast came from doing my own podcast. You know, all these different things, relationships you build, because a lot of this is about relationships. You interview somebody and they know somebody, you know, like I got the Kickstarter because I interviewed, you know, Kickstarter interviewed me for the Creative Independent last year. And, you know, that came about from interviewing Brandon Stosi, you know, runs Kickstarter from 3 years ago. So it's like, you never know, like, you know, what this relationship stems from. And then, you know, it's kind of like everybody knows everybody, and that, you know, you're going to make a connection with somebody that leads to other things. So, you know, so it's not just the monetary thing. Like, because I think if I went into it just like, I'm going to make money from this, and if the money didn't come, that, you know, well, then there's your reason to stop. That if that's your only concern, it's like you're going to make money from it. Because it's like in the beginning, I was definitely like, oh, well, you know, if you get this many listeners, you can get advertising, and you hope that. And then I can't remember some podcast was saying, like, you know, create great content. That should be your number one goal, is to make great content. And, like, you know, other stuff, you know, including the monetary or not, comes from you making great content and content that you're proud to have your name on, and that, you know, you can approach people when they're like, even if you don't have the numbers to say other podcasts, that people say yes to you because they like what you're doing, and that, you know, because you're putting great content out, that your numbers aren't the number one thing why somebody's doing it. Because it's only been in a handful of instances where I've had somebody say, like, oh, what are your streaming numbers, right? But, like, 99% of the time, no one ever asks. Like, they're just like, oh, I like what you're doing. And there's people who, they didn't have to do the, you know, doing my show is not going to send them to, the, you know, the top of the charts, right? They know that, I know that. But they liked what I was doing. And, you know, that creates, you know, the people want to do it. Or they see that, oh, that's my friend, I've worked with him, you know, I'll do your podcast, right? So, you know, I think, like, if somebody is doing podcasting, like, or anything, like, don't make the monetary be your number one reason, because it's, like, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be, you know, it's not been easy doing a podcast, and especially, like, you know, you're working full-time and balancing all that and research and going out and interviewing people, that if the monetary doesn't come, then, you know, what's going to keep your excitement and having the intensity to keep doing it if, you know, you're not doing the money? Money's not coming from it. And also, too, I've talked to other people on the show about this. Like, if you have the day job, then that sort of relieves kind of the stress of having to have, you know, your creative endeavor be the thing that you make money from. That it's like, you know, working at Strand, I get to not have to worry about, like, oh, well, this show didn't get that many listeners, so I can't have a sponsor, so what am I going to do for money, right? It's like, I don't have to do that. I can just, like, create the show and, like, you know, keep building my audience, but the money doesn't become, like, you know, the thing hanging over me to do it, why I keep doing it. Because that's not why I keep doing it. So I do it because I, you know, I love it. I keep, you know, music is a passion of mine. Interviewing is a passion of mine. And it's like, you know, I get to do both in the same thing. It's like, you know, and it's like, what a great blessing it is to be able to do this thing that you love to, you know, take two of your passions and, you know, have them combined together.
Yeah, that's, same for me. Like, It's been, I haven't achieved the monetary success yet with this show, but it's been rewarding for networking and all the interesting people I've gotten to talk to and the experiences that have come through doing it. So,
yeah. Absolutely.
And any final thoughts or anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Probably that is thing. I know somebody now, they've been saying they want to do a podcast with all the passion in their heart, but they've never done it before, and there's that fear that they won't do it right. So, I mean, I guess it's anybody who has any dream, whether it's podcasting, you know, making an album, going back to school, is like, you know, I think sometimes we want the fear to go away before we can do, you know, what we, this passion. And it's like, the fear's not going to go away. You know, it may not completely, and it's like you can't wait for the fear to go away before you do it, or you probably will never do it because there's always going to be some fear there for something that, you know, you care about and are excited to do. Otherwise, it's like it wouldn't mean anything. So, you know, have that fear and, like, you know, just keep taking the steps towards whatever that goal is. And, like, you know, the fear will go away in some instances. It'll come back. But, like, just doing the work, you know, with the fear, wherever the fear is at, like, just keep doing the work and keep taking the steps, and that, you know, that will get you, you know, closer and closer to your goal, regardless of what that goal is.
Well, you did, I guess you did talk about, like, what your goal is with, like, your final goal with everything you're doing. And I guess, like, because I know you're pursuing more than one thing, like, I guess, out of everything you're doing, what would be, like, the main goal?
I guess, well, the podcast is, like, up front, and, like, I'd really like, you know, to have that, I would like, you know, to have that be a very successful big podcast. And but, like, for me, like, all the creative things are coming from, like, one place, so it's more about, you know, it's great that I get to be creative. So whether it's podcasting, music, writing, you know, whatever, that it's constantly having creativity, like, you know, every single day of my life I, you know, getting to be creative. And, you know, there's been times in my life when I haven't, so it's just wonderful to be, just to be able to create and, like, to put that out there and have people respond to it. So that's probably the goal, just to keep creating. And, like, you know, the memoir is the next thing I'm working on, so I'm excited about that, and just keep, you know, having goals and keep going towards them.
All right, well, yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. It was good talking to you about all your passions. And
sure. And thank you for having me, Sean.
I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you would like to keep updated with future episodes of BSing with Sean K, I'm on Spotify and iTunes. And also on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and all that good stuff. And I really enjoyed this talk. One of the things I like that he said was how he talked about how he takes a DIY approach to what he does, like, rather than waiting for someone else to approve what he does, he goes out and does it himself. And that's always been my attitude with what I do. I just like to create and put it out there and connect with people. I don't wait for a network or anything like that to do it for me. When I used to be more involved in the punk scene and, like, underground music and putting my own stuff out there, and I still release my own music sometimes, but that's where it comes from, and it kind of transferred into everything else I do, to just do it, you know, not wait for it to be approved by some quote-unquote official medium or outlet. But also, another point I wish I had made more in the interview was how improv also helped me as a podcaster be more spontaneous, because, as I've mentioned many times, I've been doing improv for the past, like, over almost 2 years now. Also, check out Voices podcast, Talk Music Talk. I'll leave a link in the description, and his Strandcast as well. He also has some books out that he talked about, of course, and I think you can find his music out there as well. So that about does it for today's episode. And I'll catch you on the next one. What? BSing with Sean K. BSing with who? BSing with what? BSing with Sean K. BSing with